Coming to you from various places around the world, this is the Global Exhibitor Podcast, the podcast designed to help exhibitors succeed internationally.
It's a big effort for everyone to come to a trade show and put on their happy face for the whole time and have that same experience at the start as the end. And I heard one of the trainers say that that really stuck with me. I think that if you show up, it is showtime. It isn't just Absolutely. Seeing what you can build, what relationships you can build on the day. It's how can you progress them forward and see that real big picture and get clarity around it all.
Your host for the Global Exhibitor Podcast is Jeff Hanna, a designer, entrepreneur, business strategist, industry thought leader, and student of world cultures based in the United States. Here's your host, Jeff Hanna.
Well, thank you, Craig. I'm live in Nashville at the Gaylord Opryland Hotel. We are on the tail end of Exhibitor Live 2024 and have a special guest with me today. We first met in the U.S., but she's from Australia. It's Jess Turnbull from the Exhibit Company. And I'm just so excited. We're going to be talking to you today, Jess.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
So Jess has a varied background, but she started out outside of the industry, but fell in love with it somewhere along the way. I think that might be safe to say. And we're going to uncover a lot of her story and her experience as we have a deeper conversation into everything that she's done and all about things Australia and a few other things along the way.
Thank you, Jeff, for that amazing introduction. I'm really looking forward to sharing my passion for trade shows with you.
Oh, good.
I'm on a mission for helping people get better results. So this is a really nice opportunity for me to be able to talk to you.
Well, good. And it's an honor to have you on. And so let's get right into some of the questions.
Let's do it.
What does the profile of your staff look like?
So we have a small, lean team, and it just allows us to add in the contractors that we need for every job. Australia is really big as well. So for efficiencies, if something is on the West Coast, we use West Coast contractors. If it's on the East Coast, we use East Coast contractors. And the same goes with our transport company. We are really blessed to have many locations around Australia where we are able to store client gear so that you're not ever having to just bring it back to headquarters each time.
Yeah, well, that makes sense.
There's all these incremental things that add to ROI. It is never just the booth design.
Right.
There are so many factors, whether it's staff training, whether it's your engagement on the stand and that customer journey that they take, all the things that happen with the sales team before the show. Everyone needs to be pulling in the same direction, but then also those little things that we're able to tweak.
So we had a similar model when I had a company called Nuance International, and we had offices in Atlanta, London, and Abu Dhabi. But we were design and project management and strategy and all of that, but we didn't have our own fabrication. We worked with partners in each of those locations where we worked globally. And so we could easily, you know, build a thing, build a booth or an interior project in that location without having a lot of shipping costs and so on. So yeah, it's a good model, and I think it's really effective.
Yeah, and being able to bend and flex post-pandemic with whoever has the best services, because some of the people that were around forever have gone.
Yeah.
And, you know, supply was hard for a while, and being able to just pick the right people for the right job was a real advantage.
Yes, true. Well, for us too. And so one of the areas of initiative that I've been working on a lot over the last, say, year and a half is workforce development. And so I'm on a few boards and committees, and we're doing training. So it's not only recruiting new people, but it's training new people. Here at the show, I don't remember if I mentioned it before. I think I did, but the 50% or so are brand new, which is indicative. So you also have on the supplier side, so the exhibit houses and the agencies, many new people there with less experience. And you have still a good many client side brand people that have been around that didn't leave, although they lost people, but not quite to the level that the supplier side did. So we have a big growing disparity of experience between the clients and the suppliers, who have a lot of new people who aren't typically rising to the level that the clients are looking for right now. And I don't know if you're experiencing similar kind of need and lack of people and the recruiting challenges as we are. Are you facing those same kind of things?
I think from my perspective, we are having a similar situation, but the industry's smaller. So it's not, yeah. I mean, the people who have always been servicing are still there, the big guys. And I think that will just be the case for a while. I can't really speak to the exact numbers because I haven't really had my finger on the pulse with that. But where I see more training happening is from client side, because we are having this movement where it's changing towards a different approach to exhibiting. So that's where I'm doing my training.
Yeah.
I'm spending more time working with teams, bringing them up to speed on mindset and how to really work their booths and make sure that they're getting the customer journey right and implementing all of the tactics that lead to those objectives.
Yeah. So that is obviously part of the service you're providing. And I think it's great because I've often complained about how many, especially in the US, and I find anomalies throughout the world. Thinking of people like Lee Ollie at Expo Stars in Manchester, England, where, you know, they really focus on booth staff training and things like that. But, you know, so many of the companies in our industry tend to be all about build, you know, and it's all about the fabrication. How many counters do you need and how many demos and whatever? And they don't deal with the softer side of things, which is how you're going to use the thing we've created. And they'll spend hundreds of thousands of dollars building a new exhibit, but not explain to the client team or orient them even on this is how you use it best. And so it's critically important, but I'm glad to see you're focusing on that from a training standpoint as well.
It's a huge aspect of any campaign, I think, and one that's often forgotten. And a lot of people will just focus so much on the overall design and then build it and hope that people will come. And it limits your opportunities so much. I think that once people come up to speed with the fact that they need to get clarity around what the big picture is and they can get their teams buy into that as well, magic happens. Yeah. Everyone's pulling in the same direction. They all know where they fit. But more than that, they at the end of the show, they're able to look back and see how they contributed. And I think that's like part of a community, and it makes them want to go to the shows again, because it is a unique opportunity to shake hands with people and you're not having to dial numbers and wait for people to answer at the other end. Like it's hard, it's fast, it's crazy. It's a big effort for everyone to come to a trade show and put on their happy face for the whole time and have that same experience at the start as the end. And I heard one of the trainers say that. And that really stuck with me. I think that if you show up, it is showtime. It isn't just seeing what you can build, what relationships you can build on the day. It's how can you progress them forward and see that real big picture and get clarity around it all.
Yeah, no, I think that's great. I think about Jim Gilmore, who's the author of The Experience Economy, and he talks about business is theater and every company is a stage. And it really is. You're on stage. It's a performance kind of thing. So you've got to take advantage of it. And to think that you're going to create a whole exhibit with a complicated storyline and traffic flow and all of these things and expect that everybody that's working the booth just is going to automatically know that when they walk up to staff the booth for the day. It's kind of crazy thinking, really. So you've got to put as much energy, and typically people just don't. That's what I'm seeing, is they don't spend enough time orienting the teams and doing staff training. So I kind of look at it as two separate things. One is, you know, orienting to how to use this thing. It's like how to drive a car, you know, or this car has different buttons and gears and whatever, versus, you know, how to behave in the booth space, how to engage with people, how to be on, how to talk to them in the best way.
And that all comes back to that objective at the very beginning. What's your goal? Do you want to talk to six people or do you want to talk to everybody? And your approach is going to change for that. We've had clients where they literally said, we're at a defense show, but we only want to speak to six people. So they had a beautiful stand. I don't know my feet, but
yeah,
9 by 12 was huge. But they had a meeting room and their goal was to get 6 people in it.
Wow.
So what you do in that environment is going to be very different to if you're really going after brand awareness, which isn't ideally the best goal to have. I think it needs to be more structured than that, but your approach is still going to be very different. And yeah, so that's where the strategy really needs to be set up, because regardless of if you have a small 10 by 10, 3 by 3 booth, or if you have a really large significant booth, you need a plan. You need to know where you want to end up, and that is going to impact your staff and how they behave.
Right.
Is it number of demos? I think everyone always wants to have the busiest stand. You call it a booth, but you really, is that the goal? You want to be busy for the right reasons?
Mm-hmm.
And when a client comes back to me saying that they just felt like they had a great stand, or they were really nervous because their next door neighbor had a really busy stand, but is it because they're giving away swag, or is it because, you know, what of those people are converting?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good point. I tend to think that having a lot of people around, and I've seen booths in Europe, maybe for like some of the large shows where they're just packed, you know, I mean packed. And I'm talking about like 100 by 100 meter booth, you know, for like some of the large telecom companies, and they might bring 100 staff people working the show. People attract people, something I like to say a lot, and you're going to get people, and there's like a buzz and a feeling around like having a lot of a crowd.
Mm.
And it tends to be like, you know, you walk by a stand and there's nobody in it, then people aren't going to stop because there's nobody there. And they psychologically think, well, there must be something wrong. I'm not going to go there. And so, you know, there is a, you know, a feeling about having a lot of people, which I think is good, but it certainly might not end up on the bottom line, you know, in terms of ROI.
No one likes rejection. And I think that if you're in a trade show hall environment and there are people going by your booth over and over and over who don't want to stop and talk to you, you go inwards. It's not nice. It's like speed dating.
Yeah.
You're not, not that I have a lot of experience doing that.
No.
Very happily married. But it would get to you. So it is having that plan, knowing that you're doing the right things. But if you have done all the work in the lead up and you're attracting the right people to your booth and you have a game plan for scheduled meetings and you're utilizing that time for other things and you know that you only want to speak to 6 people, that's a very different outlook.
It is.
To have.
Yeah.
But I mean, in Europe, they're really big on hospitality.
Yes.
And people go to a show to spend time and really wine and dine with each other, and that doesn't happen in Australia. People go to a show for a lot less time. They might go with a list of 5 stands, booths, keep calling them stands. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I do, because I'm pretty versatile in exhibiting terminology globally, so it's okay.
So they might have 5 booths that they want to go see, and then they'll walk up the aisles looking left and right to see what's new. And that's where the power of your strategy really shines. Like, have you got a key message that really speaks to people? What's the one thing you want everyone to walk away knowing?
Right.
Does the stand booth do that heavy lifting for you? Or are you relying so heavily on your staff? And, you know, what opportunity cost is there for you being busy talking to someone when other people are walking by?
Right.
There's so many.
That's good.
Yeah.
And speaking of the rejection, I was thinking of a situation in at EuroShop where I thought it was a brilliant approach. What they had done is walled off the booth where you couldn't see inside, and they had a rain curtain.
I went to that stand.
Did you?
You get an umbrella and you walk through.
Did you go in?
I went in.
Well, I didn't get invited in, and I know those guys, so I felt rejected.
Do you want to tell me? I will tell you what happened.
Yeah, I was so curious, like, what was going on inside, because I didn't get to go in. And so,
that would never work in Australia.
Talking about being selective, like, you're only going to, like, people are standing outside hoping to get an umbrella to be escorted in. So I never saw it.
So you got handed an umbrella. You walked over a little bridge through a little opening in this huge wall.
Yes.
And then as you entered, it was I'm really digging deep now for memory. I don't know how they did it, but it was kind of like a rainforest. Think Bambi. It was like deer.
Okay.
But what they did that was clever was they actually had a VR experience that worked. So you put the goggles on pre-COVID, so people weren't freaked out about germs. And you the same experience was on the headset, and you were walked through a little story on their key point of difference. But you got to see, it was quite like mystical. It was pretty. I've seen a lot of VR experiences which aren't so great. That don't have a message or anything for you to walk away knowing. But I definitely wasn't their target market. I don't know how I got let in, but it was an experience and I was glad I did it, but that would not work in Australia.
You don't
closing off it. No. Well, I think if you're a really big brand, if you're one of the big boys and people are just so curious to know what's next, what have you got? What have you done that I need to find out? You're a destination stand, and then people will make that effort. And you don't need as much of a campaign.
Yeah.
But Aussies are like sheep. They don't like to be cornered. They will look from the outside and then they'll make a decision whether it's worth their while and whether they're, they don't want to be sold to.
Yeah. So I want to go back to what you talked about a minute ago with the hospitality stuff, because certainly hospitality is a thing. And I find it's fascinating because so many Americans, when they go to shows overseas, and many of the people in my talks will say like, oh yeah, they have so much hospitality. And I heard a lady this week say, yeah, we had hospitality for one day because we thought that's all we need to do. And they were like doing a show in Germany, and she's like, people were so upset because we didn't have hospitality every day, but we didn't know we were supposed to do it. You know, I'm like, yeah, you need to do it every day. And it's all the whole time the show's open. It's not just a one-off thing. But you're saying that in Australia, it's slightly different.
Yes. So when I was in Euroshop, I appreciated the hospitality because that show is huge.
It is massive.
I got my steps up. I think I was wearing a Fitbit at the time and I clocked 17,000 steps. It was a lot.
That's
for
crazy.
A day of just, I hadn't even finished the day yet. It was just in the show halls.
Yeah.
I was probably going around in circles a little bit too because there were so many halls. That I really appreciated hospitality there because I wanted somewhere to sit down and I wanted really good coffee because, you know, us Aussies are coffee tragics.
I heard that.
So when I found where the good coffee was, I kept coming back there for the following days. However, like, was I a prospect? No.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe for some of those.
Maybe. No, I just feel my view in Australia anyway with my clients, I'm not a fan of giveaways.
Okay.
I think that if you give away food, you get hungry people. Drinks, you get thirsty people. And it doesn't always contribute. I think there are some circumstances where coffee could be great because we all love coffee, but it's an expensive exercise. So you really need to make sure that your team are trained and they're maximizing all of those opportunities. Otherwise, you're just getting people, you're just feeding the masses.
Yeah.
So it needs to be done with that in the back of your mind. I'm not saying never do it because it is fun. And, you know, there's a lot of, you can really, play off all of those memories that you have when you're younger, you know, the smell of popcorn. There's so many reasons you might like to go down that path, the nostalgia behind it. But, you know, when things have changed and there's less people at those shows, they're spending less time at those shows, is that going to be the best way for you to get your result that you're after?
Yeah. It's hard to know. And it differs, I think, from place to place. But there is a unique, you know, aspect to that, which Well, it's in Asia too. It's in Latin America where people want to sit down, have a chat, you know, get off their feet, which on the big shows, and if you're standing on your feet the whole time, I mean, it's grueling and you're taping your shoes together with Band-Aids like we know some people have to do from time to time.
That's right.
And, you know, so it's a time to like, you know, break bread with somebody and get to know them before you decide if you're going to do business with them.
That's true.
Which is important, but I want to talk about the coffee stuff a little bit because tell me what coffee means to you as an Australian and And does everybody do coffee in their booths or in their stand?
Not everybody. If you
just
do,
the good
just
people
yeah,
do.
Look, if you do coffee, it has to be done really well.
Okay.
The coffee has to be really good, but you need to talk to the venue because often it's, you know, you'll end up having to pay for loss of revenue or however they organize it.
Pay them a fee or are you getting the coffee from the venue?
I think it depends on the venue. Sometimes you can bring in your own barista.
Yeah.
And other times you have to use theirs.
Yeah, I would imagine that theirs probably isn't the good stuff.
But it depends.
Maybe it is.
We've got some places. Pretty high standard in Australia.
Okay.
But if you have coffee, you want to make sure you have the best coffee. Because if it gets competitive and you don't know what the other booths have, it just becomes a little bit of a competition.
Yeah. Okay. Would that include like a sit down area for it too? Or you're just going to get it and walk around?
Depends on the size of the stand.
Yeah.
Really. That's it.
Okay. Susie, who is our makeup and hair person, mainly hair, but a little bit of makeup too, is going to talk to us about coffee. And she's a social media expert too.
Hi. We have what's called a hair expo in Australia.
Yeah.
And what I found at the latest expo was there was an amazing coffee cart and everyone was lining up to go there. And I was like, what is the go? Let's get some coffee. And no one was paying for it. And I was like, oh, free coffee, amazing. I'm going to look at the stand. What I found was really interesting was they were taking data, as you would say.
Yeah. But
to give them a phone number, an email address, where we were working.
To get the free coffee.
And then we got the free coffee. And I was like, that is clever. I mean, I'm not sure how they were paying for said booth, coffee booth.
Yeah.
But it was clever.
Yeah.
That is worth something.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I thought that was a very interesting takeaway.
Yeah, that is good.
And that is all I have to say.
Well, thank you for adding that in. I appreciate it. And for all of your good photography skills and social media stuff.
Susie and I have been friends since preschool, and knowing that I was coming on this trip as the only Aussie in Nashville, she decided to help me up the ratio a little bit and come along. So
now there's two people from Australia.
There are
at
two,
the show.
No children, no babies, no husbands. What could go wrong, eh?
Yeah.
I'm getting a tattoo today.
No, you're not.
Oh my. Quite the trip.
Yeah.
Well, any other thoughts about culture things that we do that stand out to you that are like different or weird or whatever besides other than that?
Different or weird. We don't put shrimp on the Barbie. We put prawns on the Barbie.
Oh.
I've had so many people this week. I'm just getting the record straight.
Okay.
Prawns.
Prawns.
We call them prawns. No, back to trade shows. There's a shark in the water. Yeah, it's been a saying.
Said that to me earlier this week? Somebody, I heard.
So
it was you, maybe.
Suze and I have been asking everybody. We're trying to get everyone to pronounce it correctly.
Oh my!
Come
no,
on.
I won't say it
Go,
correctly.
A shark
in the water.
There's a shark in the water.
A shark in the water.
Yeah, you're getting better.
Close? Water.
You're practically Aussie now. We'll adopt you.
Thank you. Yes. Oh, it was Trade Show Bob.
Trade Show Bob. I have him on video.
Did
practicing.
You?
I actually have it on video.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
He was doing a tech tour. I think he was a little bit embarrassed that I was making him do it while everyone could hear.
Shark in the water.
There's a shark in the water.
Oh, my.
So
the challenges I have to do for a podcast.
I know.
My goodness.
We make you jump through hoops. So, no, look, I feel like in America, people will walk over hot coals to get onto a stand. They are excited. If they go to a trade show, they're committed. They roll up their sleeves. They go to every stand, every booth. I'm never going to get used to that. I'm going to go back home and be saying booth now. But
it's okay.
They walk into the show and they're committed, whereas an Australian will divvy up their time a little bit more. So they're a bit more skeptical on how they'll spend their time.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm here and I'm drinking the Kool-Aid and I'm doing everything. So I'm not the usual Aussie. I am going to all the stands because I'm trying to learn what's new, and I'm really open to hearing about all the new technology, and I'm taking notes on what's working well. And I might put Americans up on a pedestal for their lead generation and their campaigns, but I saw some pretty bad things on the show floor.
Did you?
Yeah. It's not everybody. No, there's a generalization that you guys do great, and I am so inspired because you treat your campaigns properly a lot of the time, and well, that's what I see through the sessions. But there's always going to be a few people who don't do the right thing.
Oh, absolutely.
They're on their phones and they're not really engaging people, and their booths don't have a key message
and you get what you'll
get that everywhere.
Yeah, you do, and you get what you put into it. It's self-fulfilling prophecy, from time to time. People don't want to be there, then they don't interact or engage. They don't put a lot of effort into it. They're in the back of the hall going like, nobody's going to come here anyway, and then they just sit there on their phone or whatever, and then people walk by. They have no reason to stop and talk to them and no interest in doing it. So, yes, I see that everywhere around the world.
And they are the people that say trade shows don't work.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not one of those, it's not a part of the marketing mix that you can just dip your toe in the water with.
No.
There's like a tipping point. We all spend money on the boring stuff, the booth space, the power, the bit of furniture, but it's the quality of the furniture, and like you reach this tipping point and this J curve where all of a sudden every dollar you spend is output that actually is something that your visitor will notice and adds value to the experience.
Yeah, it really is. So Jess is from the sunny coast of Australia, if I say that correctly, right?
The Sunshine Coast.
Sunshine Coast.
But you're a local, so you call it Sunny Coast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Just north of Sydney, right?
I'm actually further north, so I've actually jumped the border. I'm in Queensland now.
Oh, okay.
But, in our industry, we're traveling gypsies, but post-pandemic, everything was remote. So my husband and I have worked remotely for almost a decade, and my husband's been doing it for 5-6 years now. So we moved our whole family, 2 girls, dog, up to Queensland, and it's just been a game changer. I love that this industry has given me the flexibility to be able to do that and give that life to my little girls.
That's nice. And what's it like living there?
Well, we picked it because, my husband's a fisherman, so he loves the fishing up there, and we often joke that I'd divorce him if he didn't go fishing because it keeps him sane. But it's just how it used to be. Like, the kids play in the street. They knock on our door at 4:30 and ask if little Mia can go play hide and seek. Yep. We're 3 minutes to daycare, 7 minutes to the beach. Everything is just, we have one traffic light.
Wow.
But we also have an airport. So it's easy for me to get from A to B. And my husband's travels for work as well. So
yeah,
we tag team a bit.
Well, I hope to get over there one day.
Please.
And I will be visiting you and knocking on the door. So
yeah, it's a beautiful place to come and visit. So yeah, open arms, come.
Okay, thank you. Well, it's been a pleasure talking to you, as it always is, and I'm glad that we got to spend some time together and do this interview. So thank you for being a guest on the podcast. So
you're thank welcome. You. Thank you so much for having me.
This has been part 2 of my interview with Jess Turnbull of the Exhibit Company in Australia, live from Nashville. Hope you've enjoyed that. If you didn't get a chance yet to listen to part 1, please make sure you go back and take a listen to that.
We like to remind people that all business is conducted within the context of culture. So each episode provides insights to help marketers understand the cultures they're trying to reach and strategies for building bridges across cultural divides. If you like the Global Exhibitor podcast, please share it with others, subscribe to it, and rate it on iTunes. We greatly appreciate the feedback. Please also check out our website and blog at www.globalexhibitor.com. And finally, if you or someone you know would make an interesting guest on this podcast, please let us know by sending an email to guest@globalexhibitor.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.